digitally uploaded.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast. I'm Matt Sainsbury, the editor-in-chief of digitallydownloaded.net. And with me this week, we have Alan.
Hey, guys.
Hello. So, I apologize in advance if some massive breaking news has happened over the past week. We're actually recording this podcast way ahead of time because Alan's been inducted into a cult and has an orientation or something or other. So,
yes, it's called the cult of moving.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
So we're recording this way ahead of time, and it's actually just after E3 right now as we talk. So we haven't actually got any news that we haven't discussed like last week. So we're going to jump into it and then talk about other stuff that's not new. Welcome back, and we are going to talk about difficult games this week, given that we haven't got any news to talk about, and we can just talk about the hard games that we've played over the years. Obviously, difficult games, everybody finds different games more difficult or less difficult than other people, but everybody's got at least one or two games that they really like that they found to be challenging. And then in that case, the challenge becomes a reward rather than a painful process. Of course, if you don't like the game and it's a difficult game, then you're not going to get anywhere because it's just going to annoy the heck out of you. So obviously the older games were better known for being challenging. I don't know what Alan's played back when he was a wee youngster, but stuff like the old Ninja Gaiden games, some of the ones I found the most difficult, Mega Man and so on. And I think that's an interesting one because Ninja Gaiden I actually liked enough that I played until I got good and completed them. But Mega Man I've never enjoyed, so I don't think I've ever actually completed a Mega Man level.
Really? I think.
Yeah. Never.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's played most of them.
played most of them, but never actually completed a level, I don't think. I always, like, some flying crap hits me and knocks me into a gap or something, and I get bored. Yeah.
That's a damn shame. Well, because I was not a child of the 80s, I didn't really experience any of those games until much later. So I like to feel like I was a bit more able to deal with them as, you know, a sort of early teenager than whatever I would have been back in the 80s, which was basically a zygote. Yeah, I actually don't find Mega Man that difficult, which is the one thing I know it's all I have. And whenever I say that, I always feel bad because I am well aware that it's really hard games, but I feel like they're generally well designed enough that I don't consider them difficult. Just like it requires like a different thought process, I guess. Yeah, I mean, they're hard games, but they're pretty damn good, honestly. I've also fully completed the entire Jak and Daxter trilogy back in PS2 on the day. Which, for anyone who's played any of those games, you'll know they're really, really damn hard for no reason.
Were they really?
Yeah.
I never played them.
You will not be able to go back and play them now. They are not designed for human beings.
Okay.
At all. I can't beat them now, but like baby Alan could. And it's really, really disheartening. Especially number two. Two is one of the hardest PS2 games out there. And I remember a lot of screaming as a child. And I think for anyone who's listening who knows what I'm talking about, I'm just going to say one word, and that's the sewer levels. Because they officially may have been the first time I've ever broken a controller. I wish that wasn't the case, but they may have been.
All of those games are kind of testing, I guess, your skills, your manual skills in terms of, you know, being able to jump at precise times, hand-eye coordination, all that kind of stuff.
It's also escort missions.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, other examples of difficult games, I guess. If you look back at some of the older RPGs, especially the older Final Fantasies and Dragon Quest games and so on, a lot of them were difficult because they tended to have like difficulty spikes, like crazy ones, when you ran into bosses and stuff. And then if you weren't properly leveled, you'd have just no hope. And then you had to work out exactly what their weakness was, usually through trial and error, in order to be able to defeat them. But also, I think one of the things that people forget can be quite difficult about those older games is that they do a terrible job of actually explaining to you where you need to go next. And that can get very frustrating for some people, or other people just love the opportunity to explore and just kind of try and figure out, you know, the next location on their own. But I remember with Final Fantasy I, the original one, way, 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 way back.
It just doesn't tell you what to do.
Like, it doesn't tell you what to do at all. And I remember I played it quite young, and, you know, I got lost. I was all right at the start because, like, the king tells you, go north, rescue my daughter. So you go and do that, and that's cool. And then he says, okay, I'm going to build you a bridge, which is a pretty sucky reward in hindsight. But he builds you a bridge, and you walk across the bridge. You have that little cutscene that says, yep, here's your adventure really starting, which was a nice touch. And then I got lost because after that, you've got to go like way, way, way east, and this little town that you go to, which is your next spot. I just couldn't find that town for ages, like as a young kid. And I got very impatient trying to go east and not going anywhere. And then I went north. I got to the Witch's Cave or something, which you don't need to go to for ages afterwards. But I assumed that was where I needed to go next. So I couldn't work out what I needed to do there. And yeah, it was just, it was difficult, not because I was like dying and stuff and I wasn't losing lives and things. It was just difficult because I just didn't know what to do next. Mm-hmm. I got stuck. So that's another kind of difficulty that has basically been purged from games in recent years. We don't tend to get... I can't think of any games that you get like stuck because you don't have proper direction anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen much anymore because it's usually either very, very obvious or it's just well enough designed that you know anyway. And that's why I think Dark Souls isn't a hard game. I'm going to be that guy and complain about people who moan about Dark Souls. It's not a hard game. It's very just well designed and you have to have patience. That's all it is. And
I think
they're all very, very good games. And I hate when people are like, oh, it's so difficult. It's not difficult. Just pay attention. Look at the game.
I mean, I think Dark Souls is difficult. But I don't think that's like a bad thing. I don't say that in a pejorative sense. I think Dark Souls is difficult because it's unforgiving. If you make a mistake, then your character is probably going to perish. And then you'll need to learn from that and go back to where your character died and not make that same mistake again. And I think that's good design. I think that's a good approach to difficulty. And I think that's fair. I don't think Dark Souls is fair. A lot of people seem to use difficulty and unfair in the same to mean the same thing. Or they, when they say difficulty, that this game's difficult, they mean it's unfair. I would suggest, personally anyway, I find the older retro games like Mega Man and Ninja Gaiden and all that to be quite unfair in the sense that, you know, the old Castlevanias too, in the sense that they throw stuff at you that's really difficult to avoid. Doesn't matter how good you are at it, it's still difficult to avoid the projectiles thrown at you at a certain time. And if you miss jump, you get thrown into a pit and die. So that kind of stuff, I think, is unfair. But with Dark Souls, I think there's always an opportunity, even if it's the first time you've come across the challenge, there's always the opportunity to play well in it, avoid, you know, perishing.
Yeah. I think, though, there is one Dark Souls boss that I really don't... Actually, no, there are two. One is the Bed of Chaos, which I would consider unfair because it's just not built around the game's mechanics, unfortunately. And I think the Nameless King from number three, which I'm not going to say anything about, but the camera does not help you at all in that first part of the fight.
Yeah.
Which is a bit unfair. And I do know what I'm talking about when I say Nameless King.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know what I mean when I say the camera is just really janky in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is one as well in Demon's Souls, which I would suggest is fairly unfair, just in the way the game's designed. The very first boss, the Phalanx, that you come across.
Oh, is that the first demon that you fight?
Yeah, yeah, the very first one. The reason I find that one to be unfair is because, like, there's no save spot anywhere near that. You've basically got to run it from the start of the level to that boss and defeat the boss in one go before you even get the first, you know, bonfire.
Yeah.
So if you fail at that, you've got like another hour of gameplay every single time to get up to this bloody boss. And I found that to be fairly unfair. Just for the design, the boss itself wasn't too difficult anyway, but for somebody who was playing Demon's Souls for the first time, that was a fairly off-putting start. So that, I guess that was, I find that to be another example of unfair difficulty. And if you look back at some of the From Software predecessors to the Soul series, the Kingsfield series, there's some definitely unfair difficulties in there as well. Like even the very start of Kingsfield 4, there's a right in front of you, this is at the very start of the game, right in front of you there's a concealed pit, and if you step on the pit, you fall into lava and die instantly. And like there's absolutely no, there's no projection that that's there. So I think just about every single person when they first play Kingsfield walks forward and then falls into the pit. That's the very first experience they have of the game. So that was after that it gets
really good. But I like that. That's really good.
It's a pretty trolley way of starting things.
And anything like that, I actually really, really like. Like, even though it's not particularly well done, I just think it's the developers just having fun and knowing that people will fall for it. And that makes me so happy. Even the beginning of Bloodborne, where you walk up and you fight the thing, the very
the
first.
Werewolf.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like the ultimate screw you from to saying, no, you are not going to have a good time for a bit.
Yeah, you got no way of beating this boss, this monster, but we're going to throw him at you anyway.
It's so good. It's so, it's just perfect, and I love it.
Thank you. welcome back to our episode on difficult games. So we talked a little bit about, I guess, a general view of difficulty in the last segment. This time we're going to talk about games that get difficult if your skill level is not quite up to par with everybody else who's playing. So obviously there's a lot of multiplayer focused games these days, from League of Legends and Dota and all the shooters. And I think it's fair to say that unless you're willing to put the time in to kind of really practice and hone your skills in those games, it doesn't take long for you to start to feel like they're a little bit too challenging because everybody else who's playing is just running circles around you. And whether you think that's a good thing or not, I don't know. If you get hooked enough on a game that you're willing to put that time investment into it, then great. Otherwise, I think after the launch of these games, their value quickly kind of starts to fall away because you just get less and less interested in getting slaughtered every time you try and play a match. So I think Overwatch is a good example of that, just to talk about one that I've been playing. So I kind of sit, obviously I'm a fairly busy person with all the site stuff I do and all that. So I don't have the time to really put into the game so I can level myself up to level 70 or whatever people are up to now. I sit kind of in the middle, I think, of most groups. I think I'm about level 27 at this stage. And, you know, I can kind of hold my own with a couple of characters. But other than that, I get slaughtered pretty badly. And I'm definitely feeling from when Overwatch was a launch game, I felt pretty good. I'm definitely feeling now that it's becoming more difficult for me to be competitive, I think is fair. Especially since I usually end up being stuck with Mercy because no one else wants to be Mercy. And
play Lucio.
There's always like the dude that's 70, level 70, and chases me around, killing me. That's not fun.
Just play Lucio. Just sprint away from them and cry. Yeah.
No, it's all good. Like, I still love the game. I still find it really enjoyable. I'm just definitely finding it more difficult now than when it was at launch because my residual first-person shooter skills aren't holding me through matches quite as well as I used to now that I'm coming up against people who are, like, genuine experts at Overwatch.
Mm. And I feel like it's even worse. Back in the day, just before TF2 became free-to-play, it hadn't even, like, more ridiculously intense player base. And an even like higher skill ceiling because there was a lot less stuff that was defined by abilities. So back in that day, that was like if you were pub stomping, you were pub stomping with an aim to pub stomp. And yeah, it was interesting time for shooters. And then also, of course, Quake has a ridiculously high sort of skill ceiling that you need to, you know, get appropriated to, I guess. And all those sorts of arena shooters. I mean, even Wolfenstein's pretty hard. Like, the new Wolfenstein's a pretty decently hard game if you play it on, like, the higher difficulties. And, you know, to that extent also, pretty much every single Platinum game can be ridiculously hard if you're playing on the hardest difficulty. Because I did an entire run-through of Metal Gear Rising Revengeance on the hardest difficulty, and that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But it was so exciting to just hear all that, like it's spoilers for a game that's like from 2011, whatever the hell it is, fighting Senator Armstrong, and the music comes on, and you know that if you get hit once, you're pretty much going to die. It's one of the most exciting things in the world. But well, yeah.
To that note, I wanted to also mention perhaps if we're talking about games that get good, but you know, skill-based and very difficult, I actually really enjoyed Ninja Gaiden 3. Especially the remake of it, 3Z, I think it was called.
Zed.
Yeah, that one. So I think a lot of people who played that through and didn't enjoy it a whole lot played it on the lower difficulty level, because at that level it kind of walks you through it itself. It basically plays itself. But on the high difficulty level, God, that game is difficult. Like, it is genuinely difficult stuff. And I thought that was quite good. I enjoyed it like that. And again, like it was very skill-based in terms of how you could get through it. You had to be good.
Yeah.
If you other examples of games which kind of put me off because of what we've been talking about, Smite. I really enjoyed Smite, or have been enjoying Smite, or like at least Smite in theory. And I've tried to play it a little bit. But yeah, basically, I'm not good enough compared to everybody else who's playing Smite now. Mm. And I always end up feeling like there's just no more point, because I end up, even with my favorite characters, end up with like one kill and 17 deaths from a match. And it's just, I know if I was willing to put the real time into it, I'd get to a point where I can be competitive again. But I just don't have the time to put into a game like that. So
that's something I also found, because I was very much into Smite in the season one and early season two days of the game. And because the meta changes every single year, I just don't have the time to learn a new, like, item order, a new, like, god tier list, stuff like that. I just cannot be bothered. And it's really rewarding if you do that, but it's also a huge investment of time, and I just cannot be bothered.
Yeah, like, it's a really huge investment in time. Like, when each match runs for, like, half an hour, you know, to sit down and have a good session, you know, of a couple of matches, you're looking at half day time investment. And you've got to do a lot of those if you want to get good at any of the characters, basically.
Yeah. That's why I picked the easiest, like, characters to play. I just play nothing but ADC characters and hope for the best.
So, yeah, that applies to other games as well. There's another one, just like you're saying, Hearthstone, the collectible card game. Blizzard's one.
God, I love that game, but I just cannot, for the life of me, get invested into it, because I always just get... It's destroyed immediately.
Well, I was really into it when it first launched. So I was really competitive, because I was you know, really regularly playing it. I was really good, but I stopped playing it and then came back and tried again.
Oh, no. Oh, Matt, I'm sorry.
The game really has completely changed, and it's just not fun for me anymore, because I haven't got the slightest clue what I need to do to get back to the point where I was before. And going from being really competitive to not being competitive at all is also pretty crushing. So it's just a wall I just don't want to climb up again. So, yeah.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I mean, that's what happened with me in Counter-Strike, because I used to, you know, I used to consider myself to be a reasonable Counter-Strike player, and turns out not the case anymore at all. Turns out I'm actually awful and can barely play the game. Yeah, I feel like a lot of games that require, you know, sort of the, like, daily investment to get good at, I just can't justify anymore, unfortunately. And, you know...
Yeah, I think that's it. I think, you know, we're all kind of busy people these days, and I wish I had the time to play one game every day.
Yeah, I wish I could play Overwatch every day, and I probably will as long as I can, but... You know, it's not going to happen, unfortunately. It's just, I wish there was 28 hours in a day so I could spend 4 of them playing things.
Yeah.
That's all I need. We'll be right back.
our episode on difficult games. So for the last section, I thought we could talk about something a little bit more esoteric and talk about games that are, I guess, they end up being controversial because a lot of people don't like them. And the reason that a lot of people don't like them is that they can be difficult to, I guess, understand. They have a kind of, for lack of a better word, they have an academic depth to them that requires a certain back knowledge or willingness to research to fully appreciate what the game's offering. And a lot of people obviously just aren't interested in doing that. So, yeah, this is games that are difficult on the brain and might make your head hurt, but you might enjoy them for that. So to start with, I mean, I'm going to bring up the obvious one, the one I bring up like every single time, and that's Nier. Nier is a blindingly difficult game in terms of its thematic depth. It pulls together a whole bunch of different philosophies, most notably probably nihilism and from Nietzsche. So to really understand what Nier's getting at, not only do you have to play it through, I think it's four times, because...
Yeah, it's four different endings.
Yeah, you do need to do the new game plus four different times to get to the full ending, which is where you get the full understanding of what Nier's saying. You also need to be able to then kind of understand, I guess, the way that Yokotaro, the director, was thinking about the game and the thematic concepts behind it, because a lot of it's quite obscured and a lot of it's not kind of brought through the explicit narrative. So to really get on with that game, and the reason I think ultimately it didn't get the hugely positive reviews it deserves is because a lot of people either completed it once or didn't really go to the effort to investigate it further. And that was a bit disappointing, but now you know, so do it, play it lots. The more you understand about that game, the more you will enjoy it. So you might even need to get a couple of philosophy textbooks and have a read of them, but it's worth it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And sort of on that sort of note as well, this has got a bit more recognition, but Silent Hill 2 is one of my favorite sort of smart games, I guess you could call it. And I've talked about Silent Hill at length at pretty much everywhere that I've written for or, you know, talked for. And it's one of my favorite, absolute favorite games of all time to talk about, just because there is so much to talk about. From just the performances or the psychology behind it, or, you know, just like, you know, characterization, you know, the notes are all perfectly written. It's rare that you come across a game that is so genuinely heartfelt and well-written and performed that, you know, there is that level of stuff to talk about. And I think, you know, a lot of people deserve to play it. Which is unfortunate because the Silent Hill collection is one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life, unfortunately. And, you know, Silent Hill 3 as well is really, really damn good. It's not, it's a different kind of good though. They're both great games. Silent Hill 1 is fine. And Shattered Memories is an interesting experiment, but, you know, the rest of them are a bit, unfortunate.
Well, I mean, I think what you say about Silent Hill can basically be applied to the entire horror genre. Like, a lot of people just assume horror is kind of a brain dead genre that is just, you know, nonsense, low budget crap. And that goes for, you know, literature, film, games, the works. There's not a lot of respect that a lot of people have for the horror genre.
Which is weird, because you would think that they would.
Well, the thing is, like, at a very basic level, it's a very intelligent genre because it's all about playing to, you know, cultural and social fears, which requires an understanding of, you know, the culture and the social environment of that time. So, yeah, even the stuff that people always assume is just like terrible brain dead horror, like Friday the 13th even, is the thinking that went into that film is actually quite good, quite smart. It's, you know, it's playing on the idea of, yeah, the tensions that were going on at the time between the sexually kind of liberated teenage community and the discomfort that, I guess, the more conservative elements of society had with that. And that was all played out through the film. And, you know, it's not the most well-written thing, but it's definitely got its head in the right space.
There's stuff behind it, which is, I think, the most important thing when it comes to that sort of game or film. And having said that as well, the Friday the 13th game looks freaking cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, I want Henry Mancini to write everything for me. I want him to score my life.
It's looking good. I think for that reason, like a lot of horror stuff is kind of that difficult we're talking about in terms of its thematic depth, because people just don't look at them that way. They just see, you know, the surface level stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if you've played it, but have you ever played The Cat Lady?
I have not.
I would very much recommend it. It's one of the few games to tackle like suicidal depression and actually do it well and do it thoughtfully.
Okay.
So recommendation from me, if you can handle that sort of thing, I would very much recommend you check out the game. It's very sad and also spooky.
Well, there's I have been playing one which is not bad along a similar theme, which is Neverending Nightmares.
Yes, that game's great.
Yeah. So is it similar to that, is it?
It's a point-and-click adventure game. So,
right.
Yeah, sort of. And also Franbo, but everyone's played Franbo already. So I feel like a lot of those sorts of games, I'm going to use the Pan's Labyrinth style of game, where, you know, it's fantastical, but in a real-world setting that's just very depressing. It's that sort of game.
Speaking of horror games, while we're at it, there's one that you should check out that's recently released as a PlayStation 2 classic on the PlayStation 4, and that is Siren. It's there now.
Yes.
Get what it, is it? Play it. It is.
Awesome. I'm actually going to buy that right now.
Get it, play it. It's got a discount. Oh, it might not by the time you listen to this, listeners, but at the moment, at least when we're talking, it's got a discount for PlayStation Plus members too. And yeah, that is one of the more underrated horror games out there. And if you do have a PlayStation Plus account, you can also get the sequel on the PlayStation 3 for free at the moment. So you can load yourself up with Siren.
Yeah. And, that was always it was a pretty big deal back in the PS3 days, I'd say.
It was. It was a mindfuck of a game. That's what it was. Like, it really was.
Should I bleep that?
It really was. It was that. It was kind of, for its time, it was almost overbearing in just how twisted it was, felt, and intense, because it had all this stealth stuff going on, and it didn't play that well, so like the stealth stuff didn't work quite as well as it should, which always meant that you'd have some frustrating moments where you'd die and you didn't really deserve to, but it was certainly tense.
Yeah,
certainly very intense, and very.
It saved me enough as a child to not want to buy it. So,
Speaking of PlayStation 2 horror games that are worth checking out, if you have a US PlayStation account, or a UK, or I think anywhere but Australia where the game is still banned, Manhunt's also on there, and it's a very intense horror game itself. That one's really clever because that's also playing into the voyeurism of kind of it's a murder simulator. Basically, your goal is to kill other people in this environment because you've been captured and you've been told you have to or you die from memory. And so yeah, you're going around, wrapping plastic bags around these other guys' heads and choking them and stuff and stabbing them in the throat and all that, and all of it's played out from like these cameras because you're being watched by somebody who's put you in there as a bit of a game. So if it's like it's like the whole Saw thing, really.
It's Saw as a video game, which meant a lot of people hated it and thought it was gonna
except it came before everything. Saw. It's really good. It was before Saw. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I had no idea. That's actually really clever. I like that. I have a lot more respect for that now.
But yeah, it's a good one. Yes, I think the classic horror games are all difficult, both in terms of how they play and also, they can challenge you if you want to think about them on a more deep level, if that makes sense. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to the podcast. This week was on difficulty and games. Next week we'll be back to, or whenever Alan's back from his hiatus, we'll be back to our regular programming. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. You can catch us on our social medias, and we look forward to seeing you next week or whenever. Thanks very much.
Digitally uploaded.